We have a special show for you this week, looking back at Louisville's biggest milestones. That's next on the Access Louisville podcast. Thanks for joining us. My name is David Mann, and joining me today are Michael L. Jones.
How you doing out there?
Special guest Jerry Abramson.
Hello.
And right on that mic, Jerry. And
hello again.
And Christy Lee Brown.
Hi. Great to be here.
Yes, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Access Louisville is a weekly podcast from Louisville Business First. Each week we bring you the latest news, along with plenty of sharp opinions about what's going on here in Louisville, Kentucky. Of course, you probably noticed we sound a little different. We have a couple of guests today, and that's because we're recording live. So thanks very much for our live audience for being here. We're at the we're at Yankee Stadium. The place is full. You can only imagine. But yeah. So we kind of go through a lot of different topics, on the show each week. And this week we're kind of looking back at what Louisville's biggest milestones are. So I'm going to start there, and I'm going to start with you, Jerry. If you want to talk about what do you think Louisville's biggest economic milestones are, and then Christy, if you want to think about it, I'm going to you with this one next. So.
Well, if you're talking about the last 40 years, I mean, you could go all the way back to Henry Ford deciding Louisville should have one of the first assembly plants. Mm-hmm. But that would have taken you back to 1923 over on Southwestern Parkway. But it ultimately evolved into an assembly plant and then big-time investment, the Ford truck plant, mm-hmm. which played a major role. At the same time, companies like Christie's family with Brown Foreman and David Jones and Wendell Cherry with Humana, and you could go on with those local folks who believed so much in their hometown and invested and expanded constantly, took risks, got the return that they had hoped those risks would provide, and ultimately have been tremendous growth engines over the years, one being in the distilled spirits, obviously Ford and manufacturing. Healthcare has grown and expanded. With Humana and so many other of the companies from people who worked at Humana and spun off and started their own companies. I think probably the biggest or the most significant economic investment or economic event that occurred in our hometown was UPS.
Yeah.
It's hard not to say that when you're going to relocate 4,000 people from their homes, 118 businesses from their businesses, 12 churches, 8 schools, and 2 libraries, so that you can have parallel runways rather than cross runways, and so that you can have better passenger service, and as importantly, if not more, even more importantly at that point, so that you would not become a backwater community because you would have this expanded opportunity with more passenger service, and ultimately, as the University of Louisville assessment said that we would have 26,000 jobs as a result of relocating all those people and putting in $1 billion into the entire airport expansion. In fact, we have almost 29,000 jobs. About 380 businesses have come to the Louisville area to use second day service and next day service, and all of that created a great deal of energy that ultimately had spinoffs and economic growth opportunities.
For sure.
So yeah. I would say that was the UPS would be the biggest.
And we've covered a ton of companies that are here because UPS is here, for sure. Christy, what do you think? What do you think Louisville's biggest economic milestone is?
Well, I'm going to take a little page out of how Jerry started his thoughts, and that is that I think it is the founding of this place. The people that came here were really brave, and they came initially, a lot of them, I guess, through the Cumberland Gap and came from Maryland, and they brought that Catholicism with them. But then the river started picking up action, and they came from all over the world. And they came because they were getting away from something that they thought was problematic. There were religious wars in Europe. They were feeling threatened. Their economics, their financial health wasn't what they wanted it to be in their homeland. And they gave up their home place. I don't know if you all thought about that, but I have been thinking about that recently. How my ancestors got on those little boats and came all the way across here. I don't frankly think I would have the nerve to do that. And I actually want to say, I think that's one of my weaknesses, because those people that did it were brave and adventuresome, and then all of that trickled down to who, I don't know how many of you all that are in the room, in the audience right now, grew up here? Yeah, a lot. This is cool. I didn't. I grew up in Maryland, and so I'm one of your adopted, whatever I am, children. I don't think I could be a child anymore. But I am so honored and have always been to be here, because the roots of this place are so important. And a lot of these people came because their desire and their passion to have religious freedom. Jerry and I actually really got to know each other particularly well because we formed something together called the Cathedral Heritage Foundation years ago as we were revitalizing the historic Cathedral of the Assumption. The history of this place is so rich, and that's just one example, but that cathedral is one of America's greatest early American piece of Gothic architecture. And at the time that we started that effort, I don't know when it was, in the 80s, I don't know, long time ago, you can tell, basically the Catholics in particular wanted to tear it down. Now, we got together with a group of Catholics, but also non-Catholics. And we said, wait a minute, let's talk about this. Let's see what we can do. And what happened is, as you know, we saved that magnificent building. When that cathedral steeple was built, it was the tallest steeple in North America. Now, that's really, I hope you'll take that home with you as a little tidbit and contemplate that fact. Los Angeles was not even there. So all the things that happened, this was the real gateway to the West. The Mexicans gave the tower, the bell in the tower of the steeple. When you hear that bell ringing, remember that your Mexican neighbors gave that in 1849 or 1852, whichever the exact date was. That's pretty cool. You know, we were one then, much more than we're one now. So the question that I have about where, as we look forward, I don't want to look backwards, although I started out looking backwards. I want us to look forward, and all of you in this room look so young, and you are the future. And I am so happy that you're here to care about what, you know, what the history was, but also what the future that you're going to create. So I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to answer any questions and do whatever you want me to do.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, we will get to the future. Don't worry about that. But I think because Business First is kind of, we're kind of celebrating our 40th anniversary, so that's why we were looking back just for a minute. We won't look back too long. But I want to bring up this slide, David, if you got that handy. We ask our audience what the biggest milestones were, and I was surprised to find that a lot of people said the building of the River Ridge Commerce Center was number one, and with a close second was the airport expansion that Jerry mentioned. And then after that, it's the building of the bourbon stuff that we have downtown now, a lot of the distilleries and that sort of thing. So I just kind of wanted to get your take on that. I mean, yeah, obviously,
a lot of Hoosiers.
There's a lot of Hoosiers. They got in there. They rigged the poll.
I was just going to say, we built those extra bridges so the Hoosiers could come over and get to work. And the next thing you know, they build this wonderful industrial area, because the reality is we ran out of industrial space, significant amounts of industrial space in Louisville. And when you begin to think of Louisville as the greater Louisville area, that certainly includes southern Indiana, River Ridge is really important. There's no question. The number of jobs, the number of companies is a tremendous win for this region. As we always used to say when we were working, when I was mayor and we were working on bringing companies to Louisville, that better they locate in southern Indiana than they locate in Cleveland.
Right.
Better they locate in Oldham or Bullitt or Spencer County than they locate in Detroit. So there is as Christy was saying, a oneness about this community that spans two states across the river and the surrounding rural areas. But I am a bit surprised.
Well, it's a non-scientific poll.
Yes,
I will say
let me just tell you, UPS was a lot harder than taking the old Charlestown gunpowder plant.
Not if you ask them. They are just so proud of that.
I didn't say they shouldn't be proud. It was more difficult.
I have a big following in the Hoosier State because I live there. So that's why. That's probably why it is. But, Chrissy, what did you think? I mean, obviously, a lot of different opinions up there, but is there one that, you know, that surprises you?
Well, I started out, and again, taking a little page from Jerry, but talking about real history.
Yeah.
Talking about the value of preserving that history through your historic buildings, which are on all sides of the river and all over the country. And the that therefore, I feel that that is exceptionally important. So I think the idea of jobs is really solid, because we need to have bread on the table. We need to have, but we also need to have all of our citizens be healthy in every way. It's not just the financial health. It's the spiritual health, which is why we restored that historic cathedral. It is the psychological health. It is the environmental health. And so going forward and looking at all you youthful folks, I would hope that you would begin to ask questions differently when big decisions are being made about how to grow Louisville. I think that the question needs to be based on, is it a healthy decision? What is that decision going to do to the health of the air, the water, and the soil? Now, I just got a text today that there is a barge cleaning facility that's being proposed right behind 6 Mile Island. Now, I'm sure we need barge cleaning facilities. I wouldn't question that in the least. But is that the healthiest place to put that particular facility? That question needs to be answered in depth and not just in a superficial way. So I think it's, yes, I think it's wonderful that we have the jobs that we have, but let's start treating those jobs in a more complete manner. How can we care for those employees' psychological health in new kinds of ways? How can we care for their air, water, and soil in new kinds of ways? So I'm very excited about the future, but I think we need to have new kinds of questions as we develop and grow the things that we have.
Yeah.
Well, I am surprised the bridges are not higher up on the list. Based on the difficulty of over 40 years attempting to build one or two, ultimately two bridges, I would have thought from an economic development point of view that would have been.
And I would agree with you. That, I mean,
higher.
Especially like Big Four Bridge. I mean, if I have someone from out of town, that's where I take them, you know, just because that's the center of the city and it's got the view and it's something you don't find in a lot of cities. So, yeah, I mean, and that's apart from, you know, obviously the Kennedy Bridge and or not the Kennedy, the Lincoln Bridge and the other new one that's been put up. But
look at what happened at Key Bridge in Baltimore today.
Yeah.
Now, are we building our bridges? Are we caring for our bridges that we have in the most thorough way? I mean, didn't you want to ask that this morning?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And as I look, you know, as I look at the Ohio, which I'm blessed enough to be able to do a lot, because I live in the historic Brandeis House that has a beautiful view of the Ohio, I was wondering about those barges. Are they being careful enough? I mean, I'd love everybody to say, indeed they are, and there's all the inspections are this and that. But those, to me, are the kinds of really important things that we got to deal with.
Things happen. So, as far as looking forward into the future, what do you think is like a top wish list item for either of you guys? And I guess whoever wants to take this one.
Christy, go first.
Wish list. That the word health is on the tip of everybody's tongue.
Yeah.
And health in all of its forms. Not just health, meaning run to the doctor because you have a cough, which is important to do. God bless all of our doctors, and God bless the history of the University of Louisville Medical School. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is one of the richest. I can't tell you, I've been blessed enough to travel, and I still do, around the world, frankly, and the feedback about the medical school is just rich. I was just in South America, and people were talking about the history of the University of Louisville Medical School. So I would say to look at health in all of its forms and get to work. What the reason, anything that's good that's happened here, God bless Jerry. How many years were you mayor, darling?
21.
Imagine, 21 years of your life in that kind of public service. Thank you.
Thank you.
No. It's extraordinary. I mean, it's extraordinary, and it's extraordinary, and I guess some of you will leave and you'll think, oh, Christy's gloomy. I'm really not gloomy. I'm really happy, and I'm actually a great optimist. But to think that we had a candidate for mayor whose life was in peril, now, that is because of a serious mental problem, right, of some huge degree, but nevertheless, we had another mayor here who, that mayor was, our candidate was, God bless him, willing to go on and to continue his candidacy. I don't know that I would have been brave enough to do that, just like I wouldn't be brave enough to get on those ships. God bless Jerry for his 21 years and all the things that you all did or your ancestors did, your parents, whatever, to partner with him. The partnership is the most exciting, and that's what I'm most excited about, helping, whatever days I have left, helping to grow and expand.
Well, you're talking about challenges.
I'm talking about wish list.
Wish list. My wish list is that the education system in this community continues to grow and expands, provides our young people with the most up-to-date approach to education, giving them the opportunity to be competitive in any space and to ultimately have the chance to be successful in their lives based on their educational experience and background. And I see it not only as an opportunity, but I see it as a challenge. Because those of you in business are looking for a talented, educated workforce. And the difficulty of finding those individuals are becoming more and more difficult. And the concern, I mean, I still bump into people, and this is the honest to God's truth, who say to me, Mayor, why is it that I still pay school tax when my kids have grown and left the house? And I say, because you're paying it forward as the people behind you paid forward, and, you know, we're all in this together. It's an amazing thing that happens to me often when people literally say, why do I still pay school tax? I don't have any kids in the school system. So I think the whole education aspect, not only K through 12, I think, you know, I spent 2.5 years in the West Wing with President Obama as his assistant for state and local government. And his focus of 2 additional public paid for years of education to ensure that we've had 100 years of public schools. They've all been free. He thought that was one of the real strengths of this country, that we had that educational opportunities, but the time had come to do 2 additional years, whether it's community college, whether it's the first 2 years of a 4-year university. The point being, everyone should be in a position to be able to go to that next step so that we can keep this country competitive. It didn't pan out on a national scale, but it has panned out in many states across the country, which now provides individuals who cannot financially afford it the opportunity to have those 2 additional years of schooling. So I think education, getting kids to understand what it is to be a citizen. I mean, you know, this whole citizenship thing has sort of evaporated. I mean, everybody sort of thinks they sort of, you know, came onto earth like manna from heaven, and everything is just wonderful, and it's always been wonderful, and we don't have to worry about anything. Well, wrong. You need to engage. There's a responsibility. For democracy to work, you have to have an educated electorate. For folks to be able to have the kind of community and state and nation that they want, they have to engage. They have to know what the issues are. They have to know where they stand on these issues. And most importantly, they need to, you know, for a representative democracy to work, you have to hold your elected officials accountable. Well, if you have no idea who your state rep is, no idea who your state senator is, no idea who your school board member is, no idea who your city council person is, and I could go on and on, then they all become independent contractors. And they're not reflecting you and what you think is important. They're doing their own thing because you don't know who they are. And when you go to vote, you remember the name because you saw it somewhere, and they get reelected and life goes on. We need people educated. We need people engaged. We need people that are willing to step up. I mean, I'm not talking about solving, no one individual is going to solve poverty or homelessness or high school dropout. But I can work with a youngster who's a sophomore in high school, one-on-one, as I did every year I was mayor. I had a kid I mentored, and ultimately worked through it so that they went out, they finished high school, and they went into whatever the next step was. They wanted to make money, they became a plumber or an electrician. They wanted to get a college education, they went to college. But the point was, I was there for that child. You say, well, yeah, you're one. Well, I'm one, Christy's one, David's one, each of you are one. The next thing you know, we're in a position saying to kids, there is hope. There is reason to work hard and be disciplined and get that education that you need to ultimately be the person you want to be in the future.
Well said.
Bravo.
So what's something Louisville has accomplished that really surprised you? Like something you can't believe it actually happened?
Well, I think I would say merger of city-county government after trying it three times over 40 years and it failing over and over and over again to ultimately bring it together and get us to begin thinking, at least at the time, 20 years ago, to be thinking as one, to be focusing on what we could do as a community, to understand that this community is nothing more than a patchwork quilt of neighborhoods, and if one corner of a patchwork quilt is beginning to fray because there's a problem, that we're all in the game to solve that problem, because that fraying of a patchwork quilt can ultimately fray the entire quilt. And the only way you get that is if people who live in this area realize that whatever the difficulty is over in that area is something they need to be concerned about, and they need to be willing to do something about. And so, to me, the vote of the people of 54% to 46% in favor of merger was the biggest thing that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime, second only to two bridges across the river. I never thought
I'd see that come up.
Never thought I'd see that in my lifetime.
I was surprised at that one.
So. Yeah.
Chrissy, how about you?
The most surprising, is that what the question was? Yeah. I think I'm surprised every day as I see new kinds of relationships and new kinds of partnerships growing. And I am happily surprised because I believe that this place, this Louisville in particular, is a place that has a particular talent for different kinds of people when left to their good works. Are able to come together and be real empowered problem solvers. I think that I'm constantly thrilled with the growth of our nonprofit sector. I'm constantly amazed and also very much looking forward to our government, to our corporations, embracing our not-for-profits in broader ways, in more meaningful ways. To be honest with you, I would love to turn the governing of our city over to our not-for-profits. I actually think they know what needs to happen. You mentioned homelessness. We're not the only place in the country that has homelessness, but we do have a serious issue. The people that know what to do with homelessness are the not-for-profit leaders in that sector. And so if we could encourage them to, though, then there are many different groups within that sector, but encourage them to come together in new kinds of ways and fund them in new kinds of ways and empower them, I believe that we would make faster progress in that societal condition. And that's not only peculiar to the homelessness issue. I think it's peculiar. Education. I think we need to be listening. You mentioned that. We need to be listening to our educational leaders. We have one of the top leaders in the public school system in polio, period. He is extraordinary. And we get hung up in these trivial kinds of conversations about people in those kinds of authorities and positions. At any rate, I think we need to be listening to these not-for-profit leaders in new kinds of ways. And so I'm very optimistic about that. And I think that this place has that heritage. And I think it goes back to how diverse our founding cultures were. At one point, I think Louisville had some of the largest numbers of choral groups in the region. Now, I don't know if that's still a factoid or not, a valid one or not. But you think about the singing groups, and you think, wow, where did that come from? Well, I would suggest it came from their roots. It came from Germany. It came from France. It came from, you know, all of those places that these people came here from. That's a fun thing to think about and to build on. Our cultural life here is so rich. I moved here in 1968 with my divine husband, Owsley Brown, from Washington. And everybody was, and they were so snobby about moving to Kentucky. And I had no idea, because I'd only been here for Derby, and that was pretty fabulous. But I had
it's
no
like that
idea.
All the time.
And I got here, and I was blown away. We didn't have enough days in the week, even in 68, to go to all the cultural offerings that we had before us. And they were so superb. I mean, really superb. So with everybody continuing to pitch in and really empower their families and their neighbors to grow these various forms of our health, whether it be cultural or intellectual or financial, it's just great. It's a wonderful thing to have married into a family that has such a commitment to this place, and they express themselves in that through this company, Brown-Forman, that Jerry alluded to, and that blessedly he was kind enough to serve on its board of directors for a number of years. But the thing that's fascinating about that is that company is here. It's what now 5,000 employees. When I came, it was 1,000 employees or something. It was, or even smaller. It was much, much smaller. But that they're here. You know, it's your relative. It's your relative. It's somebody else's cousin, and then we can care as a shareholder for that entity. That's really special. So I'm not soliciting that you buy Brown-Forman stock, but I am soliciting that you support your local companies, you support your local entrepreneurs, you support the emerging companies, that the emerging ideas that people have, and as you were saying, Jerry, mentor the young. But it's the same idea. It's mentoring and fertilizing the goodness of this place.
You know, there aren't many communities. When we started a program called Everyone Reads, I don't know if any of you all remember that.
Yeah.
But we literally got 10,000 volunteers to make a commitment to spend a half an hour with a child who was not reading at grade level. And we matched you up either near where your workplace was or where your home was. And you'd go over to that school once a week, every other week. You generally spend more than a half an hour, but that was the pitch. And literally, with a full day on Saturday to prepare someone, one day to prepare someone to work with a child, we moved that needle from 17% of the people in the Jefferson County Public Schools, elementary and middle school, who are not reading at grade level, to single digits. Now, 10,000 people said, we're going to make a change because it's in our community's best interest. And that's what Louisville's spirit is all about.
Right.
That literally is the example I give all the time.
Yeah. And that's about love, right? Let's give a hand for love.
Oh.
I mean, and our circle of harmony and health, and if you don't have one, please pick one up at the table. But it has hearts all around it. And the reason it has hearts all around it is just because of this.
Yeah.
And because this is at the heart of what a good place is about. It's like a good family, right? It all starts in the same basis. And then you have that love and you fertilize it. And I'd love Louisville to be known for this. I mean, let's be known for it. Let's be proud of it. We're a place of caring and sharing. And yes, we have made a lot of mistakes. But let's talk about those mistakes. I mean, I'll never forget when Ricky Jones is a dear friend of mine, and Sadiqua Reynolds. They're both really good friends. I'm crazy about them both. And they were out at my house one Sunday afternoon. I went out to the kitchen to get a cup of iced tea for each of us. And I don't know, the conversation was very tense, and it was racially very tense, and it was tough. And I said, you know what? I can't leave this room until I have said to you two, my friends, I come from a slave-holding family in Maryland. Now, you know that because my name is Lee, and you know your history. I mean, that's a family, prominent family, that in the history books anyway. Statues are now being taken down of, whatever. But, you know, I have to say to you, I have to have that conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that conversation. It wasn't as long as I still would like it to be. I got to get back with Ricky and Sadiqua. But the point is, when we know each other here, and we have the ability to appreciate each other, and we have the ability to love each other, and so let's just raise that up.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask about the things Louisville does right, but I feel like you answered that, so I'm going to go to Michael here with the next question.
Okay, yeah. Well, Mark Greenberg talks a lot about how when he was in middle school, he visited City Hall, and he met Mayor Abramson, and that is what inspired him to a life of public service. So I wanted to know of both of you, if you could give the next generation of Louisville leaders a piece of advice, what would it be?
And have you given them this advice yet?
Okay, the gray-haired lady will start. I would, you know, I think I probably already said it, L-O-V-E. So love yourself, love your family, love your place, and then get to work. You know, we are all here to serve is the way in which I was raised. And I have never run for public office, but I do think I've served. And I think I'm serving. And I'm working hard to try to do that. That's what wakes me up, makes me jump out of bed in the morning. That's what's exciting. And that's the thing I love about this place. You know, people market this place. Sorry, Jerry, may I give you a little insult? At one point in your career, I believe it was your career, maybe it wasn't, maybe it was Mayor Armstrong, but I think it was yours, you had a marketing firm from New York or someplace, Chicago or something, that came in and they said, we need to market Louisville as the 16th largest city in the country. Well, I remember saying to my husband, who gives a damn? Why would you care? Now, you can't answer it just yet. Why would you care if you're the 16th largest? And then, interestingly, before my husband went to heaven, he was given an award by the Wilson Society, and it was a big deal. I mean, he thought it was a big deal, and I did too. It was lovely. And so he wrote an acceptance speech, which if anybody would like to have it, I have printed it in a little book, nice little booklet, and I'd be happy to give it to you. But he basically said, the title was, Big is Not Better. And I was talking to Sam here about this place, because he came back, he just told me, from traveling around the world, decided to be a boomerang and come back to his home place. And God bless you. And, you know, we were talking about that. I mean, we have all the bones here to be one of the, we are, I think, which is why I'm sitting here, one of the greatest cities in the country, if not the world. But we got to bring our love together, our hands together, and just value it for what it is. And I don't think it's being the 16th largest city. I think it's actually being the most caring city, the healthiest city. I mean, what if we could say to the world, we have the healthiest air, the healthiest water, and the healthiest soil, and we know it, and we can prove it.
I agree. We pitched that.
Now he's got it.
We pitched that.
We
pitched that 16th largest community because when we merged city-county government, we wanted the relocation community, and there is a whole group of men and women in the business of representing companies to relocate. We wanted them, we wanted to make that top 25 size list. We thought that was important in terms of potential employees, significant enough to ensure a decision maker that he or she would have, if located here, the kind of folks that could go to work for them. So we thought, you know, we were the 48th largest city in America, and we became the 16th largest city in America. So that's why we pitched it. But yeah. But I hear you, and I think you're exactly right. The reality, and one of the things that you might ultimately ask us about, so I don't want to jump out, but the reality is, you know, how do you frame a community like ours vis-a-vis the rest of the country in an attempt to get young people to think about us and to give us a chance? And, you know, saying you're the 16th largest community is not going to do that. But saying that the quality of life in this community, saying that you can get from an opera or a ballet to your home in less than 20 minutes after the evening is finished, saying you can get to a basketball game or a football game and have ease of access, saying that you've got a speed museum and you've got the Louisville Orchestra with an incredible conductor, with them just winning the Grammy. Going through those kinds of things, talking about a solid public school system and private school options, talking about neighborhoods and what it means to live in a neighborhood, the walkability of a community, the parks of a community, which I'd put our system up against pretty much anybody, any other city in the country. Those kinds of things, I think, relate to young people who are trying to decide where are they going to go, what are they going to do. Now, it's got to be jobs, as you had said, jobs. You got to have a job. So if you're going to bring Susan or David from Chicago to Louisville, they've got to have an opportunity to have a quality job that they enjoy, that they find stimulating, etc. But they also have to look around the community and say, I really think I want to live here. This is really a special place. And those are the kinds of things that I think ultimately we can sell this community to others and to businesses. I mean, I would always, we'd have a business decision maker come in, and he or she, we'd take them to the orchestra if they were playing that weekend. And we would sit there and we would talk about how old the orchestra is and how long it has been playing and the records that we used to do that were focused on new classical music and the making music concerts for children. And, you know, you talk to them about the access. So if you're living in Chicago, you have a lot of this stuff, but in Louisville, you can partake. You can engage. How many people have known folks in New York who've lived there all their life and never been to, and then you fill in the blank? In this community, you have the opportunity to get to, enjoy, financially afford to do everything that you want to do based on whatever your interests might be. That's the way you pitch a community, and that's the way you pitch it not only to young people, but in my judgment, that's the way you pitch it to decision makers from around the country looking to relocate.
Yeah. I look at some of the cities in the southern U.S. and in Texas and kind of the Sun Belt area that are growing very fast in population. And I wonder, like, how much do you think that leadership matters in terms of growth like that? And how much of it is just circumstance? Like, people like to live in a warm place, or people are escaping, you know, high prices in California and going to neighboring states. Like, and then you kind of see that level of growth in Tennessee too. So I guess my question is, like, is leadership the only thing, or do we just need that little bit of luck too?
Well, you know, I always look at folks used to say it was the taxes that were the problem in Kentucky and in Louisville. And if we could just move to Tennessee, there's no personal income tax. No, or yes, there is no personal income tax, but there's a 9.5% tax on groceries. You know, there's a 9.5 sales tax on pharmaceuticals and prescription drugs. You know, come on, guys, it costs money to fill potholes. So government has got to generate revenue to be able to provide what the citizenry in that community wants. You know, I remember your mother-in-law, who Sally said to me one time, somebody said, oh, so-and-so just moved to Florida, and they live there one half of the year plus one day, so they don't have to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. And Sally said, I'm not moving to Florida. I'm paying the taxes because this is my home and because I want it to be as good for the future as it has been for me. To me, I think weather plays a role. I mean, there's no question about that. But the Southwest growth has, again, going back to what Christy said originally, I'm just almost finished with Walter Isaacson's book on Elon Musk, and he keeps bringing thousands of employees to this business that he starts, and he puts it in Texas near Austin, and that business that he starts, and he puts it in Texas near, you know, and so there is a hype going on in terms of the Southwest. The weather is good. It's that way. But I think leadership plays a role in making sure that you have the amenities in your community that support a family who has decided to be a part of the community, which is why we built the AAA baseball park, which is why we did the Belvedere way, way back in the 60s, which is why we did the waterfront, which is why we did the walking bridge. And you go on, which is why we did and continue to do the incredible park that David Jones and his family led the movement for the 21st Century Park. You know, Olmsted was here. Those are the things that ultimately make a difference if you've got the job that keeps you energized and keeps you excited.
And they make a difference because they are what's going to make you healthy. Mm-hmm. And we need to flip our brains and make us think that way, make us evaluate our political candidates. How do they feel about the cultural health or the psychological health or the financial health? What are their basic beliefs in those areas of health? How are we going to keep our parks growing so that we, and then what are, I mean, we're bringing here with the University of Louisville and the Environ Institute, we're bringing science in to answer the question, we hear that the parks are very valuable for your psychological health and for your physical health, but we haven't articulated this, we haven't proven the science yet, but now we're beginning to do that. That's really innovative and really creative because that means we're thinking in a holistic way. We're thinking about our total being, and we're not just thinking in these silos. I believe that when people begin to realize that's the kind of thinking that's going on here, it's the kind of history. We have more national, we are second to Boston in the number of National Register sites in our city. Now, that's pretty cool. Nobody knows it, though. Yeah, I mean, really, let's clap. And that means that our history, our architectural history, and that's in all neighborhoods. I mean, we have, what is that stat about our brick alleyways? We have more brick alleyways than, I don't know, I think any other city practically. We have these rich neighborhoods that are just beginning to, well, they're just beginning to, I think, really begin to flourish. But it's only when each of us decide that it has to flourish. And we have to push. We have to push ourselves, and we have to push our corporate leaders and our government leaders and our philanthropists. And just one more thought that I think is the future is when we all begin to understand that each of us are philanthropists. I hate it when I'm cited out as a philanthropist. I'm so glad you didn't say that. I think you didn't say that.
I honestly forgot, but...
I'm so glad you didn't say that. I don't like being called that because I believe we all are philanthropists, every one of us. And I just... so it's exciting when we think about how we're going to sprinkle the stardust and empower each of us to know that we're the agents of good health in all of its forms.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, I promised I would wrap things up on time, so I'm going to go ahead and do an outro here. Before we go, real quick, anything you're working on that you want to plug, like a project or anything, website, a social media channel, anything like that? Jerry, I'll start with you on that.
I serve on the board of Dare to Care, and we spend a lot of time feeding people in this community. And our hope is that we end up going out of business someday as a result of the commitment from so many in this community to support that effort. And so I would, if I have an opportunity to say something positive about a organization, that's one that I volunteer personally, did once a week during COVID, doing once a month after COVID, and now I'm on the board. So I would recommend you look at that for opportunities to volunteer.
All right, and Chrissy, how about you?
Well, I beg you, do not leave without your circle of harmony and health. They're on the table out here. And think about which sphere or how you're going to get involved in every sphere. We are creating, in tandem with another project that Jerry is involved in, which is the University of Louisville Board of Directors. Thank you, sir. And we are working intensely with them to basically have them launch a new vision of health for our community. And that basically is having us, as I said earlier, bring science in to analyzing whether these are healthy decisions or not healthy decisions, and all of that, all that that means. And you mentioned Dare to Care. Our next big push, if you will, with Envirome Institute at U of L is going to be nutritional health, because there's a lot of questions out there about what is really nutrition, what is good nutrition. And a lot of those we don't know the answers for, but we're going to begin with the university to dig into that question in a substantive way. We also are going to be restoring, and are in the process of restoring, two wonderful buildings right at the corner of 5th and Muhammad Ali to create the Envirome New Vision of Health Urban Campus, which is going to bring Jerry's University of Louisville students from that wonderful campus out there down to the heart of the city, down to the homeless dining room next to the cathedral that you and I and many others built all those years before, so that we can use that as a laboratory. And I don't mean that in a creepy way. I mean that in a good way, in a supportive way. And so Envirome, the University of Louisville, New Vision of Health, please take your button and become our partners.
Before we go, I really appreciate everybody being here. If you like what you hear, we don't have a special show like this every week, but we do have a lot of conversations about just the civic things around town. We talk about downtown. We talk about new businesses. We have a lot of guests, so consider subscribing to this podcast on all the good popular podcast services such as Apple, Spotify, Radio Public, and those things. Thank you very much, Christy.
May I thank you?
Oh, yes.
I really would like to thank you, and I've said that earlier today in some other capacity, but I am very grateful, and I'm not the only one, to Business First for realizing that partnerships are so important, and this is a beautiful example of that. You're welcoming us here, and you continue to do it, and I just want to thank you on behalf of Envirome and the University of Louisville.
Really appreciate that. We really try to connect people and you know, just kind of lead good conversations in the community. So, but thank you, Christy. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Michael. Thank you all you guys for being here. Really appreciate it. I'm going to throw it back over to Shay for one last little roundup here, but thank you very much.